This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Last Friday was World Peace Day, and what better way to conclude our series on the triple nexus of humanitarianism, development, and peace with me, Dr. Ahmad Faizal Pedaus, President of Mercy Malaysia. We're going to be discussing humanitarian financing as the last part or last component to this discussion that we've had over the past few weeks. We started off with World Humanitarian Day. Now it's World Peace Day, and all this work requires money to sustain, isn't it? What are the sources of funding for an NGO like Mercy Malaysia?
Thank you very much, Inwat. First of all, it's very ironic, and also it's very symbolic that World Peace Day today in 2018 comes at a time when there are at least 68.5 million refugees globally who have been displaced as a result of conflict and war. Now, this is not counting people who are displaced because of natural disasters, climate change, etc. That shows us the extent of the issue and the problem. This means that 68.5 million people are not where they are supposed to be, and they have to be cared for, they have to be given their basic rights. Now, all this needs funding and financing. And with the pattern of conflict, especially, that we've seen over the last decade or so, where they're likely to be more prolonged, more complicated, more complex, yeah, as well as with natural disasters occurring more frequently and climate change issues now forcing deep and as well as prolonged crises in some parts of the world, we now need a model of financing in the humanitarian sector that can cope with all of this travesties, with the intention of not just providing first aid, but also to have sustainable solutions and outcomes for most of the people who are affected by all these calamities. Now, what does that mean? It means that funding needs to be there when there is an acute crisis, but that it also means there has to be funding for preparedness and mitigation, especially where natural disasters and climate change issues are concerned. Then there has also got to be money for peace building and peacekeeping where conflicts are concerned. On top of all that, of course, there has to be money and financing for the response, whether it is in the acute as well as chronic stages. For a humanitarian organization, there are a few major portfolios where we get our financing and funding from. Generally, they can be divided into five or six major portfolios, depending on where that organization is situated and what type of organization it is. If it's the UN, it is slightly different from an NGO. If it's a National Red Cross movement, it is slightly different from the International Committee of the Red Cross, yeah, which is a very select organization, yeah, a very special organization. Therefore, there are differences, but generally there are five or six categories. Number one will be from the general public. In most countries, they are called the public, yeah, the general public, you and me, the ordinary guy out there in the street, yeah, the ordinary makcik, the ordinary pakcik, the uncle, auntie, as well as young ones everywhere. We give usually in smaller amounts, yeah. That's not to say that we can't give in large amounts, but generally speaking, most of us among the general public give limited amounts, but if there is volume, then the amount may be substantial. The second category would be the private or corporate sector. In some parts of the world, this sector, the business sector, is called the business sector or the mercantile sector. Or in some countries, the private, when private donations are mentioned, they actually denote individual donations. But in Malaysia, we use the term private sector to denote the private sector and the corporations that are in it. In Malaysia, the private sector is a very strong supporter and donor of humanitarian causes and the humanitarian cause as a whole, not just of Mercy Malaysia, but also of many other organizations, including international ones, not just Malaysian ones. We also know that some of the corporations in Malaysia also fund and contribute to international movements and organizations. The third portfolio is the government. In some countries, this is called public donation, especially in OECD developed countries. In some of these countries where they are actually donor countries, when we say donor countries, the top 20 or 24 or so economies in the world, these are the countries which generally, on a regular basis, give donations and contributions to the formal UN system, as well as to other big entities, big international NGOs, the International Red Cross Movement, etc. Countries like the US, the UK, Australia, Norway, and newer actors like the United Arab Emirates also are in this group. In Malaysia, the Malaysian government, Malaysia has not yet reached that level of donorship, and the Malaysian government has also stated, even the previous government, and we haven't seen any new statements come out of this government to say otherwise, that Malaysia is not yet ready to be a donor country as far as humanitarian causes are concerned. However, Malaysia has been active as a country, and federal government agencies have contributed financially as well as materially and human resource-wise to both disaster and conflict areas before this. Yeah? So in Malaysia, the Malaysian government is a substantial contributor, I would say, but not a very large one to the humanitarian cause as opposed to other major donor countries. The fourth category would be philanthropists and foundations. In Malaysia, these are aplenty. Yeah, there are many foundations, philanthropic foundations. There are also many individual philanthropists. They can be divided according to many subcategories, according to racial or ethnic divisions, or by faith-based or religious divisions. Sometimes this is necessary because some of these foundations only give towards a certain kind of cause or a certain kind of humanitarian cause, yeah, that usually is associated with a particular religion or faith. But generally speaking, there are also those who give to any worthy cause. Globally, though, there are very, very big foundations around. Yeah? The Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the biggest or the best known. Yeah? The Clinton Foundation.
A foundation, not an extension of private money or business money?
They are, but generally speaking, we divide them because usually the extension of business money is only in the initial stages. Foundations usually have a life of their own after that, and some of the money is coming from the tycoon or the family that upholds or is the main benefactor of the foundation, yeah, rather than from the business entity itself. In Malaysia, we have examples of this, the Jeffrey Chia Foundation, for example, the Berjaya Foundation, yeah, etc. Yes, some of them are direct extensions, but they're also money which are not directly associated with the business. Mm. The fifth category is international aid institutions. Now, for an organization like Mercy Malaysia, in a developing country, in a country from the global south, although we are now generally regarded as a upper middle income country, yeah, and with a capacity that is in terms of technical expertise as well as human resource that is almost matching that of a developed country in many ways, yeah. We still have this category separately. In a fully developed country, which is a donor country for humanitarian causes, this category may be lumped together with the public category. And they will only have this separate category for international funding if the international funding comes from aid institutions which are outside of their own country, which is not very often. So, for example, the Norwegian Refugee Council, which is technically an NGO. However, it has a very, very strong relationship with the with the Norwegian government and the Norwegian Sovereign Fund, which is currently, again, technically known to be the biggest in the world in terms of its capitalization. So it is almost fully supported, although it does have other sources of funding. The biggest chunk of its funding comes from their own government. Now, they would put anything that comes from agencies or the sovereign fund that is associated with the Norwegian government under the public category, whereas they would probably have only a few donors outside of Norway that they will put in the international aid category. Now, for Mercy Malaysia and for a lot of organizations in the country like Malaysia, we will have this category separate, because it may be that there will be more money from international aid institutions as compared to Malaysians, depending on the NGO or depending on the organization.
Mm-hmm. So in Malaysia, the majority of the donation would come from the private sector, meaning businesses, isn't it? Is that true also for internationally, or do you see more retail or small donations happening for NGOs in developed societies?
As a distinct category and as a distinct sector, yes, you're correct. The private or corporate sector in Malaysia is probably the biggest sector. For Mercy Malaysia, over the last 19 years, I would safely say that they have contributed between 60 to 70% of the donations we've had from Malaysia, the financial contributions we've had from Malaysia. However, even in Malaysia, while this is true for most organizations, yeah, there are organizations in Malaysia which have very strong public support. However, they tend to be segmented. And they tend to be either faith-based, yeah, the churches or the mosques or the Islamic movements. Some of our humanitarian NGOs are linked to some Islamic NGOs, for example, which do more than just humanitarian work. Yeah, likewise with the some of the Christian-based ones. Yeah, etc. So for these faith-based organizations, they would have a strong individual retail donor base, if you like. However, they are usually, like I said, segmented. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It can be a very good thing, especially if, for example, I'll give you an example of, say, a crisis occurring in a predominantly Muslim country. Yeah, and this particular NGO, which has very strong links to missionary-like Islamic NGOs or organizations, etc., it can easily raise a lot of funding, yeah, through individual donors in Malaysia for that particular crisis. However, it may not work so well if these above crisis happen in a country which was not a country which has the same majority faith, for example. Yeah? So in Malaysia, we've yet to have a strong general public awareness on the need for good humanitarian donorship. Now, while I say that, there is extremely good general public support in Malaysia for acute emergencies. So whenever an acute disaster happens, especially natural disasters, floods, major earthquakes, etc., there are huge amounts of support from the Malaysian public, which I think organisations like Mercy Malaysia have always been very thankful for. What is perhaps lacking still, and what we as organisations need to do more of, is create more awareness of the fact that it is probably not enough and sufficient for our work to be done in a good way, for us to do it in a sustainable manner. And even in the acute phase, sometimes we need more than just the first 2 weeks worth of funding. So that's where more education and more awareness is needed. Over the last few years, we have also seen the rise of a good outcome, yeah? The rise of some of the philanthropic foundations, which have become more and more, shall we say, in tune and also aware and more likely now than, say, 10 years ago to give to humanitarian causes. A lot of foundations in Malaysia like to focus on, like I've said before, on sometimes faith-based agendas, etc., which is fine. But more and more nowadays, we find that they are more open and more amenable to widen their focus of contribution to include humanitarian causes, which are not necessarily faith-based. Yeah.
But most people, or the most international humanitarian organizations, wants to move away from this segmented approach, right? And so that all the funds can be pulled together and respond to a crisis regardless of what the needs are, rather than having a fund earmarked or for a specific purpose.
True. And I guess this can only come with three things. One is heightened awareness among the general public, heightened awareness in government, heightened awareness in the private sector, but most importantly in the general public. Because without that happening, there is no way we can achieve this. So in the world globally today, there's only one organization that in the humanitarian sector that we can safely say has managed to have both in terms of sustainability as well in terms of quantum and volume, general public fundraising to the extent that it is able to support operations, even though the crisis may no longer be on the front pages of newspapers or the first items on the news. Yeah, and that organization is Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, which their reach at the moment is global, and they get about 80 to 90% of their funding from the general public, mainly in Europe, but also now extending over to Australia and the Americas, and also in some parts of Asia they get their funding from. Now, most other organizations have various portfolios. This includes not just NGOs, but also include the UN agencies like UNHCR, UNICEF, WFP, UNFPA. They all have multiple portfolios. And of course, the UN and the International Red Cross have the advantage of getting yearly annual budgets given by donor countries. But of course, these are now also with the recent economic turmoil, yeah, and more protectionism. And recently, of course, the America First policy by the current U.S. administration, they have seen cuts to the UN system and to the Red Cross movement that are quite substantial. But generally, they still have a lot of funding from donor countries. Now, the second criteria that needs to happen is the for more sustainable funding, more pooled funding, is that the level of the economy of a particular country, and of course, when we talk about regions, the level of the economy of regions like the European Union, for example, and in Asia, of course, of ASEAN, it can only happen if the level of the economic level of all the countries in the region have gone up a step or two. Yeah. So if Malaysia's GDP and also economic growth over the next few years propel us, hopefully, into the ranks of developed countries, yeah, fully developed countries, of course we'll be able to do more. Why is this so? Because of course, if the government, the corporations, and individuals have more to spare, of course people will be more likely to give more and give more in a more sustainable way. Yeah. So here again, this needs to happen in a way that is organic. We cannot make believe this or create this out of nothing. Yeah, we've seen this happen when, for example, in the early 2000s up to the mid before 2015. Yeah, when the oil prices were very, very high. Countries like Qatar and United Arab Emirates, for example, once they reach a certain level of economic prosperity, they were able to contribute a lot to the pool humanitarian funding, both globally and as well as specifically for projects. Now, the third criteria for this to happen is for governments and for major businesses and corporations to take the initiative and also to become more responsible towards global issues as well as issues within their own countries and within their own regions. So again, this has to do with the level of development and awareness. So in the UK, for example, the UK government has created an emergency fund, a pooled emergency fund that is available annually and will be distributed to major British-based NGOs and other organisations, including the British Red Cross, should there be any calamities, catastrophes, anywhere in the world, not just necessarily related, in the UK. Now, we have, Mercy Malaysia have, in the last decade or so, we've been talking actively with the Malaysian government. There are some positive responses on this, yeah, as Malaysia now looks to be very active, yeah, in helping or wanting to help countries in the region, especially for the Malaysian government to create a pool fund. We've also talked to ASEAN to perhaps work towards having this pool fund for which will then be able to be disbursed to the most able agencies who are able to deliver the best aid, etc., in times of crisis. So far, there's been a lot of positive feedback, but of course, the substance perhaps is still not there in terms of the actual funding, the actual money. So once we get there, hopefully this will happen. Yeah.
Right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Ahmad Faizal Pedaus, President of Mercy Malaysia. We're discussing humanitarian financing. We'll talk more after a short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. My name is Chua Antik. With me in the studio today, Dr. Ahmad Faizal Pedaus, President of Mercy Malaysia. We're discussing humanitarian financing. Dr. Faizal, so I see in your annual report that Mercy's total income last year was $13.4 million, which was down from 2 years ago in 2015 when it was $22.3 million. Was there a reason why there was a such drastic drop, yes, in the contribution?
Thank you, Antek. We've studied this over the last 19 years, yeah? And we have records going back to 2001. So for the year 1999, when we were first founded, yeah, we were founded in June 1999, and for the year 2000, there were not enough documentation because we were very small then, yeah, and we didn't have an organized structure yet. But from 2001 onwards, we had good accounts and records. And when we've studied our financial flow, so we've always had peaks when there were major natural disasters. And once in a while, we've had a peak when there were conflicts, but they were very specific conflicts, not any conflict. And they always dropped the following years if there was less of either one of these two major factors, either a big natural disaster or a conflict. So 2014 and 2015 represented two of our best years. And if we were to put them together, those 2 years, they represented the 2 years, the 24 months, where Mercy Malaysia managed to garner the highest amount of financial support in our 19-year history. So, because in both years, we had about the same, about 23 million ringgit. Now, in every cycle when that had happened, yeah, from way back in 01, the first time it happened was when it peaked during the tsunami. So the bumper year was 05. Although the tsunami happened, the Indian Ocean tsunami happened on December 26, 04. Because it was so late in 04, as you can imagine, most of the funding came through in 2005. And later in 2005, there was the Pakistan earthquake, if people remember, although most people won't. There was a major earthquake in Pakistan as well, in Kashmir, the Kashmiri part of Pakistan, Azad Kashmir. Because of these two major disasters, it was a peak year in 05. It dropped by about 100% the funding that we had in 05 as compared to 06. But it was still quite substantial because there was still money funding coming in, especially for Pakistan, which happened late in 05 in October. And then it dropped again in 07, which was an extremely quiet year with not much happening. We had another bump in 08 when there was Cyclone Nargis that hit Myanmar, that hit Burma in 2008, which was another major natural disaster where we had major operations. The Gaza war happening actually at the end of 08, but it extended again into 09. So 09 was not so bad, although we didn't have a natural disaster. At least the Gaza war happened. And then so there was a lot of funding coming in for that. Now, 2014 and 15 were special because we had multiple things happening at the same time. We had Typhoon Haiyan, which happened late in 2013. We had the third Gaza war, which happened in 2014. There was a second one in 2012, which was very small, if people remember again. And in 2014, it was then followed by the major floods in Kelantan, our biggest ever floods in Malaysia since 1970 or 1967, depending on where you want to compare with, yeah, the West Coast or the East Coast. And for the first time, there was a major natural disaster in Malaysia, which needed a response that went beyond the emergency phase. There are floods every year, annually in Malaysia. But the usual pattern for flooding in Malaysia and the response is that there will be an emergency response, and that's it. Once in a while, there will be an emergency response, and there will be some preparedness programming that happens later, mitigation programs. But 2014-15, the big Kelantan floods that people remember, Kuala Krai especially, yeah, and this, and the vision of Kota Baru being inundated, yeah, and which affected Pahang as well. That was the first natural disaster in Malaysia where a full response was needed, from emergency to recovery to rehabilitation to rebuilding and back to mitigation and preparedness. So, and some of the work continued and has continued even until now. Yeah. So, so 2014-15 were kind of special in that sense. Now, Mercy Malaysia, while acknowledging this, we realize that therefore this actually separates, if you like, the men from the boys in the humanitarian sector. And in my first session in tech with you, we said this unique situation that Mercy Malaysia was in. While we are globally recognized and we sit at the same tables, walk in the same corridors as most of the international organizations, both NGO and UN. However, where funding is concerned, we're not there yet in terms of sustainable funding. So the pattern that has been repeated, 05, 08, 09, and 14, 15, is that we peak when there are natural disasters happening and when there are conflicts which tug at Malaysians' hearts. There are many conflicts around the world, but most of them don't tug at the hearts of Malaysians as much as, say, a conflict in Gaza. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So this is because of other factors. Yeah. And therefore, Mercy Malaysia must work, and not just Mercy Malaysia, but also all humanitarian organizations in Malaysia, must work towards achieving a more sustainable level of funding. Because if not, every time there is a quiet year, we will have a situation where it drops by 30%, by 50%. And that's not right in a way, yeah. Because in actual fact, humanitarian work in this era requires humanitarian organizations to be prepared professionally. And even if you use volunteers, you need to train them beforehand. You need to position stockpiles of supplies, etc. All this costs something. And we do need to educate both our major donors, the corporate sector, the philanthropists, the foundations, the government, that it's not just when the disaster occurs that we need the funding. It's also before and after. So this is still a challenge, and we hold it to ourselves as well, that we are most responsible for this to ensure that the environment changes and the understanding increases where this is concerned.
Yeah, at the moment, in essence, Mercy have had to save up when there is an excess of income for quiet years. So last year, for example, was when you had to run a budget deficit of about 2 million. Is there a way, you mentioned the need to make it more sustainable. Is this only education on the public side? Is it on the donors? Or is there a way on your end that you could maybe manage the funds, like how university manage endowments, to make sure that the fund grow on its own? Are those mechanisms explored as well?
Excellent question, thank you. Because previously, and not just Mercy Malaysia, the international humanitarian system as a whole can be divided into the formal one and the informal one. Yeah, And the formal ones can also be subdivided further. But let's make it simple and say that the formal one is the one that is internationally recognized, has the UN in it, yeah, and the International Red Cross movements in it. There are also other formal ones which don't fully subscribe to this system, yeah. Like there are there's a humanitarian movement within the Islamic countries, for example, yeah, the Islamic base NGOs, etc. There are also organizations in the East, yeah, in the Orient, from Korea, from Japan, especially increasingly now from China. Of course, China was never much involved in external aid before this, but that is slowly changing. Yeah, you have Suu Kyi, for example, out of Taiwan, which is a major player, yeah, and is a big organization by any standards. Now, that's the formal one. The informal sector would be the smaller community-based organizations, small NGOs, some of them not even registered sometimes in their own countries. Yeah, they don't actually conform to any standards or to... They just want to do good. And as I said in our first interview, organizations like Mercy Malaysia always look back at ourselves also and remember the days when we were also partly like that. Yeah, and so we never say that it's bad to be like that, but it's just that it has some good sides and some limitations. Yeah, so the informal sector usually only comes to life when there's an acute natural disaster, especially, or there's a conflict somewhere where they are or their communities are involved, etc. Now, the formal sector does work in a more sustainable and a more continuous manner, because especially if the disasters are huge or if the conflicts are prolonged. Now, in the old days, when I say the old days, I would put it as somewhere between the 90s, yeah, up till about 2010. Yeah, and the Haiti earthquake was probably together with the tsunami, the Indonesian tsunami in 2004-05, probably were milestones in the humanitarian sector, simply because the needs were just so huge. Yeah? And so it dawned upon even the formal sector that the traditional way of funding, which is donors give and implementing agencies implement, and implementing agencies then forget about how to secure more funding, yeah, and the governments, the donor governments and the big corporations also, if they're involved, also forget to see how this can be done in a more sustainable manner. Those days are over because the needs are just huge these days. With 68.5 million refugees, most of them with very little hope of going back to where they come from in the immediate future. Take the Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. When are they going to go back to Myanmar at the current pace of things happening? Yeah? Of course, there are peace efforts, etc., but we see that the light is still not there at the end of the tunnel for most people there. So for most of these people, the funding will need to be continuous. And this is where both international organizations as well as organizations like Mercy Malaysia now realize that the traditional way of a donor giving and us spending is not going to work into the next 10, 20 years even. Yeah, and we need to find a better way. And so there are now more instruments being looked at. For example, for natural disasters, people are now looking at reinsurance as a method of financing. Yeah, as I've said before, governments now, especially in the developed world, are looking at creating pooled funds. As I said, it will be great if ASEAN, for example, can come up with a pool fund of its own, yeah, where it will then hold and be an investment fund of sorts, yeah, whereby it will grow. Of course, it has to be managed. It has to be transparent. It has to be accountable. Yeah, it has to be open. The accounts have to be open for everyone to see. Yeah, and so that there will be no hanky panky going on. It has to be managed by the member states, for example, and then wisely disburse. Yeah, not all of it at once. Yeah, wisely disburse whenever there is a major catastrophe, calamity, travesty. Yeah. Whereas for organizations themselves, like the UN, the International Red Cross, the National Red Cross, as well as NGOs like Mercy Malaysia, we also have to look at these models, growth models, as well as perpetuity fund models. Yeah, and we have to look at how these funds can be made to work so that we can have more in the future, etc. So these are some of the areas which definitely, yes, we will need to look at, because the old way is not going to work. And one of the areas, perhaps, there are two aspects here. So the World Humanitarian Summit, the high-level panel on humanitarian financing, which incidentally was co-chaired by Mercy Malaysia's patron, His Royal Highness the Sultan of Perak, Sultan Nazrin Shah, which was a great honour for him, I'm sure, as well as for us and Malaysia as a whole, came up with two basic, there were many, but there were two basic big ticket recommendations. One was that there was a need to reduce need, yeah, therefore peace building, disaster preparedness needs to be focused on, etc. More money needs to be put there so that less money needs to be spent on the actual crisis later on. There's also a need to diversify the funding base. So this is where it was key. Yeah, it was key. And diversifying the funding base, ironically, the international community, including the Western world, is looking very much at one angle, which is Islamic social finance, which is becoming more and more important as there's a huge amount of resource there and a huge amount of untapped potential. Depending on what you read, it runs from a few hundred million to at least a trillion, yeah? depending on which data you look at and which source. Then there's one final component, which is for the humanitarian community itself to try and reduce some costs. And we may or may not have time today to go through it in detail, but the international humanitarian community and major donors agreed on what was called then the grand bargain, which basically looks at how costs can be reduced in the way the international humanitarian community works, so that every month, every dollar, every cent can be used better, can be utilized more for the beneficiaries.
Yeah. I mean, that discussion, I'm afraid, have to take place at another setting because we've run out of time. I suppose for people who are looking to contribute to Mercy, there is a way that they can contribute on a sustainable basis, which is, was it R1 a day that they can do so?
Oh, yes. So we have a few options now, okay? And because we're out of time, I will be very briefly mentioning them only. One is our, the easiest one is our Seringgit Sehari campaign, yeah, which is ongoing, yeah? And major banks in Malaysia are participating as our supporters, and some banks have this program on their ATM machines and on their now online banking systems, yeah, where you can actually just click and donate to our Seringgit Sehari program. It literally means you give a ringgit a day, yeah, which could be 30 or 31 ringgit a month, yeah, or 365 ringgit a year, depending, yeah, or more, in a continuous, sustainable way, rather than just giving when an emergency occurs. Now, we still welcome, of course, donations when an emergency occurs. We still need them, but the Seringgit Sehari will help. The two other sources which we're working very hard on, and we've already received some funding through, are Islamic social finance instruments, yeah, like zakat, yeah, either directly or indirectly, yeah, as well as we are looking at later on to help people to also give directly to particular programs, particular projects, yeah, which are long standing and not just emergencies. So for these ones, you will have to go to our website, yeah, or go to our Facebook account, and the details will be there.
And the website is mercy.org.my?
It's www.mercy.org.my.
Dr. Faisal, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you, Antek. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.